Who in the community most needs the love of Jesus right now? Maybe the first name that came to mind was your own. Maybe the first name that came to mind was that of a dear friend or an acquaintance or someone whose name you don't know, but you can tell by the ways that their eyes droop and their shoulders sag that not all is right. Maybe the people that came to mind were the two young women riding the MAX train on Friday, or the men who died defending them. Maybe you expanded community and gave it wider bounds, and you pictured that person who sleeps under a tarp near one of the bridges guarding their grocery cart. Or maybe you pictured someone in the news. Maybe you pictured a refugee or a prisoner or someone lying in a hospital bed. The truth is that there is always, always someone in our midst who needs the love of Jesus. And since Jesus isn't immediately here, we become Jesus stand-ins. We put on our superhero capes and we go out into the world and we save it. But we don't do that by leaping tall buildings in a single bound or by vanquishing evil or slaying dragons in our midst. We save the world, or we make it a little better, or as our vision statement says, we change the world one life at a time, offering compassion when suffering shows up. This letter of 1 Peter, written almost 2,000 years ago, lays out the link between compassion and suffering. The letter was written to that first generation of Christians who were discovering that the world was pretty hostile toward them. The response then was not to meet hostility with hostility or to repay evil with evil. The response was to acknowledge, first of all, how hard it was to practice their faith in such a difficult environment, and then to show compassion to each other and to the world. They would know they were Christians by their love. And while there are places in the world today where Christians do experience hostility and even violence because of their faith, I would say that you and I don't know that kind of oppositions that the early Christians faced, or that Christians in Egypt or Indonesia face these days. But we all know that the world and that society can be a pretty hostile place. We are conditioned to judge and to criticize. Our children are taught to compete more than they are taught to care. Our natural instinct is to think, me first. Compassion then requires us to draw on something other than our instinct and our impulse. It requires that we stop and we put on different glasses. And we see that person or that situation differently. It requires that we acknowledge the presence of suffering that is the common thread of our humanity. And it requires, frankly, that we get over ourselves and our opinions and our self-righteousness. You might have noticed I got a haircut this week. I've been seeing my stylist for 6 years since we moved to Portland, and the way you do, I know about her and her family, and she knows about me, and she knows about all of you, and she knows about Greg and Sarah and the dog. And I had scheduled my appointment for later in the afternoon on Wednesday, and I had to leave a meeting early to get there, which made me feel a little guilty. And when I arrived, there was a woman with wet hair sitting in my stylist's chair. My stylist told me she was running about 15 minutes late. And I told her I needed to be done by a certain time because I had to go pick up Sarah, and she assured me it would be no problem. So I went and sat on the couch, and I was leafing through People magazine, trying not to be angry, feeling really pinched and put upon. When my stylist was ready and I went in, I told her again that I had to be done by a certain time because I had to go pick up Sarah, and she told me no problem. She knew I wasn't happy. And I did nothing to cover that up. She started on the haircut, making chit-chat. And then about halfway through, she told me that her husband's cancer was back. The entire scene changed. I had shown her no compassion. I had not given her the benefit of the doubt. I was focused on me and my schedule and my stress. Her news about her husband reset my selfishness, but I wish it hadn't taken that. Suffering can lead to compassion. The opposite is true, too, that lack of suffering can lead to lack of compassion. Two psychologists from California did several studies to see if social class affected one's ability to be compassionate and caring about someone else. And the results of, I think they did four or five studies, the results of all the studies led them to the same conclusion, that social class does affect the ability and willingness to be compassionate. And these doctors drew the conclusion that the less a person has to rely on someone else, the more self-sufficient they are, the less that person will care about someone else. But we are called by God into a different kind of living. The late Henry Nouwen reminds us, compassion asks us to go where it hurts, to enter into places of pain, to share in brokenness, fear, confusion, and anguish. Compassion challenges us to cry out with those in misery, to mourn with those who are already lonely, to weep with those in tears. Compassion requires us to be weak with the weak, vulnerable with the vulnerable, and powerless with the powerless. Compassion means full immersion into the condition of being human. Some of you are aware of a place of pain in our own Northeast Portland community that began last winter. Back in January, the Normandy apartment building in the Cully neighborhood was sold, and the tenants there received a letter from the new landlord informing them that their rents would be doubled, meaning that every person or family who lived in those apartments would need a new place to live. They could afford their $650 a month rent. $1,300 a month was beyond their means. The neighborhood rallied and the landlord was pleaded with, but to no avail, and the 16 families who were living in those apartments would have to move. Many neighbors in Cully figured out ways to create additional dwelling units or rent a room or part of a house. And to date, only two families are still seeking a place to live. The neighborhood also created a fund to help those families being displaced with their moving costs and with first month's rent. But because the new landlord was obligated to help with those costs, none of the neighbors took advantage of that fund because they wanted to leave it for others in the neighborhood who would face a similar situation. Suffering can lead to compassion. You may have heard the story about the two homeless men who rushed to help in Manchester after the bomb went off. Chris Parker was panhandling when the explosion happened. He was knocked to the ground, but unfazed, he got up and went to the aid of victims. Stephen Jones helped pull nails out of people's bodies. He explained, "Just because I'm homeless doesn't mean I haven't got a heart, or I'm not human still. I'd like to think someone would come and help me if I needed it." I know that I'm pretty good of thinking of ways that other people can be compassionate. Maybe you share that gift with me. I think it's pretty easy for us to look around the world or the neighborhood or the school or church even, and watch people make choices that don't seem to be based on care or concern or compassion. That's not the point. The point is for us as a faith community and for us as individuals to constantly seek out ways that we can offer compassion. Will we get tired of it? Yes. For most of us, our first instinct is not to be compassionate. There is this amygdala response, a biological urge to protect oneself and one's resources. When you start practicing compassion, you realize it will never stop because suffering is ever present. It gets overwhelming. But maybe it will be, as Mother Teresa once said, I have found the paradox that if you love until it hurts, there can be no more hurt, only more love. Maybe our compassion will, over the years and centuries and millennia, begin to outweigh suffering. I hope so. After the events of Friday afternoon, I considered writing a whole new sermon. How could I talk about compassion in the face of such horrific violence and hate? How could I not? A friend from Wisconsin got in touch and asked what our congregation is doing to combat Islamophobia. And I thought about our Abrahamic Thanksgiving last fall when we joined with Muslims and Jews in the community to share a meal and to give God thanks for the blessings that we've known. I thought too about the way some of us have been involved at the Muslim Educational Trust and the way many of us are reaching out in friendship to our Muslim brothers and sisters. My heart goes out to those two young women who are doing nothing but sitting on a train. And I ache for the families of Ricky John Best, and forgive me if I mispronounce it, Taliesin Murden Namkai Mechi, who were killed, and for Micah David Cole Fletcher, who was wounded. They stepped up. They did the right thing. They stopped hateful speech. They were courageous, and they were attacked. I don't know why they did what they did, but I like to think it had something to do with this human compassion. But I will tell you, I have no compassion for the man who perpetrated the crime, just as I have no compassion for the people who killed those Coptic Christians in Egypt, or for the ISIS bomber in Manchester, or for neo-Nazis, or for white supremacists. Maybe Jesus is calling me to grow in my compassion, but I'm just not there yet. I am, though, leaving that door open, allowing God to work in my heart the way that no one else can. The best I can hope for right now is to respond with compassion and kindness in ordinary situations. Back in 2012, author David Foster Wallace gave an extraordinary commencement speech at Kenyon College that talked a lot about compassion in a roundabout way, and if you've ever read David Foster Wallace, you'll be happy to know I've condensed his words here. Most days, he said, you can choose to look differently at this dead-eyed, over-made-up lady who just screamed at her kid in the checkout counter. Maybe she's not usually like this. Maybe she's been up three straight nights holding the hand of a husband who's dying of bone cancer. Or maybe this very lady is the low-wage clerk at the motor vehicle department who just yesterday helped your spouse resolve a horrific, infuriating red tape problem through some small act of bureaucratic kindness. Of course, none of this is likely, but it's also not impossible. It just depends on what you want to consider. If you really learn how to pay attention, then you will know there are other options. It will actually be within your power to experience a crowded, hot, slow, consumer hell type of situation as not only meaningful, but sacred, on fire with the same force that made the stars, love, fellowship, the mystical oneness of all things deep down. And finally, many of you know that beloved author Brian Doyle died yesterday, that leprechaun of a literary genius. He died after battling a brain tumor. When he was first diagnosed, he gave us these words of wisdom, which seem so fitting for today. He said, be tender to each other. Be more tender than you were yesterday. That's what I would like. Be tender, friends. Let us be tender to each other and to the world, for Jesus' sake. Amen.